Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in, time for Daily Editorial number 2. We're going to talk a little bit about Russia right now. Russia vis-a-vis the Ukraine. Decided to do 2 daily editorials today because of the importance of each one. We didn't want to have to drag them out to 25 minutes because we know what happens to attention. Before we start this editorial, I want to say the following. Yaruski Chelovyaki, Yaznaya Kak Gavadi Puruski, Jim Torzer, Znayat Kak Gavadi Puruski. Keep that in mind. Jimmy, we just basically said, I said that I'm a Russian individual, a Russian man, and I know how to speak Russian, and Jim also knows how to speak Russian. Jim, let's get some opening comments on what the Russians are doing in the Ukraine to start this.
Well, I think it's important to give context. You know, yesterday, I think one of our regulars, you know, wrote a little piece about how, you know, I should shut up about it, and, you know, because I hate Russia so much. And that's you know, I want to be honest. That's completely, you know, kind of a false accusation. I absolutely love the Russian people. I've lived there. I was in Berlin at the fall of the wall, worked with Russians and people, the occupiers in East Germany. And I lived in the former Soviet Union for a number of years. I speak the language. I studied it for years. Since 1985, I've been a Russian focus and then a Russian foreign area officer. The Russian people were phenomenal. They would do anything for you. They were so polite. And they'd give the last food they had on the table, they would give to you. It was really always wonderful to be with them. But there's a big difference between that and the power and the people in power in Russia. And historically, there's been this struggle between, you know, identifying more with Western ideals versus kind of collective Eastern ideals. Right. And there's a constant struggle with that always. And there's been very little time in history where Russia has actually had some sort of Western belief that the individual was important. And, you know, there was a little bit of light after, with Catherine, a little bit with Peter the Great, Catherine the Great, a little bit of light just at the end of the Tsar's period. But then, of course, the communists took over. And, of course, we had a little bit of light just after the fall of the wall for a few years with kind of a drunk Yeltsin until Putin took over the role of the new czar. And the unfortunate reality, living there, being with the people, looking at the abuses that state authorities commit against their people and against anybody they oppose, is something that most people in America have no or anywhere else in the world. They just don't have in the Western world, they don't have a concept of it. And I'm going to give a couple of quick examples. You know, when I was in the Republic of Georgia, the Russians were handing over border security to the independent nation of Georgia under Shevardnadze as president. They were angry about it. They buried barrels of nuclear radioactive waste under the border guards facilities where they did their physical training and played soccer. So after a few months of the Russian pullout, the Georgian border security people in their training area began coming up with massive cancer and radiation burns until they found the material. And, you know, so that's just one example. I can talk about many. A friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, got a lifetime dose of radiation after entering Vaziani Air Base after the Russians pulled out. The elevator inside the Ministry of Defense in the Republic of Georgia, when the Russians pulled out of the building, which is the caucus's headquarters, now regional caucus's headquarters, they mined anti-personnel mines in the elevator. I mean, how bitter and pathetic. I could go on and on. When they left East Berlin, it was absolutely just pathetic what they did, pulling all the windows and frames and doors out of the houses, hauled everything back to Russia, and the people there lived horribly. So with that context, the Russian people have been suppressed for generations. very little visibility to Western ideas and ideology, and it's because of the leadership. That's what I'm against, and that's what I see happening in the oppression in Ukraine.
You know,
but I do want to talk about the tactical and the relevant things that are happening on the ground.
Yeah. Well, let me make a couple of comments. Number one, I completely understand what the Russians are doing in the sense that it is a defensive maneuver, and I understand that. I understand the fact that that Russia fears the West, and they certainly fear NATO. Do they have a right to fear NATO? Well, it's not a perfect world, and I believe they do have a right to be very, very concerned about NATO. You were going to break in, Jim. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. So here's the difference. It's not the Russian people. The Russian people don't fear NATO. The Russian oligarchy fears NATO and Transparency and Western ideas. So they're going to use whatever tactics they can to protect themselves.
Right.
That's just a reality. This is just a fact.
Right. No, I would agree with that. And from a defensive standpoint, I would have to say that that probably is something that Putin is fairly smart to do, not necessarily from a political standpoint, but certainly from a defensive standpoint. I think that's important, very important for him. He is a bit paranoid, let's say. But, you know, he's very worried about, I mean, God, with what the U.S. is doing right now, I'd be really concerned about American actions personally.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt.
Any comment on the irreverent comment that I just made?
No, I think there's a good point to that. You know, the Russians did not, so they're very concerned of their border, their southern border, and the expansion of Islam into their area and region.
Right.
That's part of the Chechen issues. And of course, they're very concerned about, you know, expansion of the Western ideas that actually are, you know, some of the more nuts, more liberal ideas with, you know, gender identity, all the, you know, globalization, that stuff that really, really bothers them. And there's good reason for that. That's just
I agree. Jeez, I agree, Jim.
Yeah, those things I understand.
Yeah.
But the method to do it is not through, in my view, it's not through violence. But let me talk a little bit about the actual. So I made a couple weeks ago, I said, look, I believe and I see indications that the Ukrainians are preparing for a massive offensive to try to, you know, change the dynamic in the war. And I use the example of the Operation Storm in 1995 with Croatian forces in the UNPAZ unit and protected areas where the Serb army and Serbian forces had controlled, you know, four large portions of Croatia. And they managed within weeks to push them out. And they did it against a much more powerful military and with a lot more weapons and arms. But they did have some, you know, some help from other European countries, particularly Germany, some a little bit from the United States, but more importantly from some of the border allies, Austrians, the Germans. Now, what I see happening with this massive influx of U.S. and Western arms, because it's not just the United States giving $1 billion in the most recent distribution of arms, which includes more HIMARS, which is very accurate, you know, rocket systems, but also some of these other more specified weapons, a lot of ammunition. It looks to me like they are both training and preparing to take offensive operations. Now, offensives, they don't happen overnight. They take a while for them to pull that. And, of course, the way I look at it is they need to begin sometime before the fall, before you get the first rains where things get very muddy, and then the first icings, which makes it very difficult to maneuver large armor forces for the Russians. And what I'm seeing tactically on the ground right now is the HIMARS long-range effective weapon systems, artillery, and some of the other rockets and the drones that have been provided are effectively taking out close supply dumps to Russian forces. So the Russians are having to move their supply lines farther back away from their units to protect them. Simultaneously, Ukrainian forces have been attacking the MSRs, the major supply routes, both bridges and narrow crossings tactically on the ground that make movement of logistics supplies to their forces is very difficult. There's only two bridges that they actually can cross the Dnieper River for the Russian forces that have moved to the west side of that river. And the Ukrainians have knocked both of them out. The Russians continue to try to rebuild them, but then the Ukrainians are knocking them out again. What that indicates is that if they do move, if the Ukrainians move with a sizable offensive, and they're getting a large number of anti-tank, anti-armor weapons from the United States, from other European nations as well, including the Germans, and of course the Brits, and many other NATO partners, is that they will be able to trap those forces on the side of the river and may force a large surrender with some of the Russian forces they can't resupply.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we just today, or I guess yesterday afternoon, some method, we don't know how, but some explosion at the airbase, Saku airbase in near Sevastopol, down in the southern portion of the Crimea near the Black Sea Fleet. Mm-hmm. And that's a critical airbase for support to defending Russian forces along the Crimea border up in that area in the above the Crimean Peninsula in the eastern part of southeastern Ukraine. So all those would indicate that a preparation of the battlefield for a major offensive operation. Now, whether or not that kicks off, whether or not the Ukrainians are able to muster that, will depend on how quickly they can get enough people trained, how quickly they can get their supplies to the front, and how effectively they can cut the supplies to the Russian forces. There is a possibility that it could be very difficult for the Russians to maintain a high level of combat operations under those circumstances.
Yeah, I think the only critical comment that I would make at this point in time is I understand Putin's rationale in terms of defensive actions. I think it would have been better had he, rather than invade the Ukraine, if he would have gone in, and it would have been better if he would have simply sat down and had a conversation with Zelensky and said, we're very concerned about this. Can you help us out? Why didn't that happen?
Well, because the Ukrainian people didn't elect Zelensky to get closer to Russia. They elected Zelensky to get into NATO and get closer to the European Union.
I realize that, but maybe if Zelensky would have taken it one step farther and just said, let's talk about it.
I'm going to go back to the fact that, Russia was signaling what they were going to do, and they were going to violently attack people. So, whenever you think that somehow, and I've never thought that it's been justified without some trigger. The fact that you're worried about a border country, an independent border country, the fact that we're worried about Cuba, the fact that we're worried about Mexico and their relationships, these are relevant worries.
Yeah.
But at no time, the United States did not invade Cuba. They did the stupid move with this, Bay of Pigs operation.
Of course they did. Yeah.
But we had a big standoff on it. But you know what? Cuba still exists, and it's a socialist country. Venezuela still exists. It's a socialist country. It's destroying its people. But we didn't go down there and invade it. And the cases and circumstances that we have been involved in South America, some of them have been kind of ugly. But usually it was about finance and power. It had to do with United Fruit Company. It had to do with, how much, other issues that were, beyond the scope of just being afraid of an expanding communist or socialist. There was other money involved.
Right.
In this case, there's other money involved.
Right.
It's not just about fear of NATO. Right. There's other big issues that are out there involved in Ukraine. And it has a lot to do with corruption on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot. There's just a lot of, it's just a very tough neighborhood because of the way that the Soviets and the way that the authoritarians and the oligarchs have run it for so long.
Yep. Well, I have to say, Jimmy, I think the world is getting to be a very tough neighborhood. And I have to say, within that context, America certainly has something to do with that. There you have it. Big Al's views on what's going on, the Russian rationale between what's going on vis-a-vis Russia and the Ukraine, and Jimmy's thoughts. Jimmy, anything else you want to say?
I think, again, we got to talk about China pretty quick, because what they're doing, they're signaling very clearly that they're going to do something in Taiwan. And the opportune time to do it is when a weak, divided America and we're taking actions like this. So that's another topic.
Yeah, that's another topic. We can do that anytime you want. I would suggest doing it no later than tomorrow. I would have to say one thing. I just pray to God that Pelosi doesn't do any more grandstanding and continue to try and irritate Russia. That is very, very definitely silly, silly, silly politics. Jim,
hey, I want to add one more thing for our listeners. Nancy Pelosi, who's publicly came out and said that no one is above the law in justification for this attack on Mar-a-Lago, the FBI raid. Right. No one's above the law except for Paul Pelosi for DUI. No one's above the law except for James Comey and what he did with the FBI. No one's above the law but Hillary Clinton. You know, take a look at the Democrats that have been taken easy and have been above the law.
Yeah.
So it's pretty clear that this is political, and her arguments are only to her own constituency. And I just think even the most, rabid progressive supporter has got to be scratching their head for a moment when they're hearing these contradictions.
Right. You guys, maybe we'll start doing 2 daily editorials a day. If you'd like to see this, give us some subject you'd like to hear us talk about, especially you, Tony. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Jim, always a pleasure, my man.
You bet, Al.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.